Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with tonight's episode of Bench with Bubba, I want to talk to you about rotoballer.com. Everybody, I write content over there multiple times a week for DFS and season long, and you can find the Bench with Bubba podcast over there if you're not just downloading it from your listening platforms. And I want to let you guys know you can win big in 2022 with rotoballer.com's MLB and DFS premium pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use Rotoballer's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value plays, reacher stations, lineup optimizers, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, you get your MLB premium pass for an extra 10% off using discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com today and start rotoballing like a boss. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Bubba in the Bloom, episode 3. We have real baseball to talk about today, folks. We promised it to you last Thursday, and it came true. We have real baseball to talk about. I think it was like 7 games on Thursday here. There's still a couple going on as we speak. So we'll have some fun stuff to chat up there, some recent news, some good, some bad, and just an all-around just fun time talking baseball because we have some good stuff to talk about. I'm on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host, as always, the Bloom portion of the show on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, man?
Doing fantastic, Bubba. Last main event draft last night. Could not sleep after that, of course, because the adrenaline was flowing. Opening day eve, all of those feels. Woke up this morning, took the kids to daycare, and then instead of turning left to go back to my house to go to work, I hung a right. Went to the golf course.
Love it.
Play golf with a buddy here. My buddy Scott, who's in our home league, new listener to the show as well, and then went over to his house and watched opening day. So it was a glorious day.
Sounds like a little bit of
Masters
day
in between, and yeah, like our worlds collided today. It was fantastic.
Yeah, like I joked about it. I think on my Tuesday show, I'm like, I just need to like call in sick on Thursday and Friday. I didn't. I just, you know, I had my iPad up in my truck and I could hear it streaming and stuff and doing all that. I wasn't sitting there watching it. People don't panic. But like if I was like stopped, I could watch it and do that, all that kind of stuff. But it was glorious. Like for those that don't realize it, Ryan and I, we love golf also. So the Masters is quite the deal. And he inspired me because I went and when I got off of work, I put my headphones in and I went and walked 9. I'm like, I gotta go hit some balls, gotta go have some fun. I've been doing that as often as I can because I can knock that out pretty quick on my own. So went and did that and caught up on baseball. It's beautiful to I joked because most people like it and get the joke. Some people think it's annoying. I don't care, but I like to, like, you know, so-and-so dong. Like, it's just one of my things I love to do. And like, I finally got to do my, I've missed that so much.
I think it was the Tyler O'Neill dong.
Yep. I have a lot of shares.
Life is good again. Yeah. It's funny. Like the things that you forget about with opening day, like just the little things. So I saw like a lineup tweet this morning. I was like, whoa. I remember that I have a notification on my phone. There's an MLB HR. Home run account that just tweets out automatic. It's just a bot, but it tweets out every time someone hits a home run. And I was like, damn, I forgot about that. The last time that thing tweeted was, I think, Freddie Freeman in the World Series. So just little stuff like that, like that's part of your kind of hourly routine almost in season that instantly goes away in off season, then switches right back on. And And yeah, like having all that stuff come back today was all good feelings all around.
Yep. It was all good feelings. Plus Tiger Woods one under, like it's whatever could go right, seemed to go right. It's good stuff, as you said. So we'll talk a little opening day here in a minute, but we do have some recent news to discuss. A little trade took place. The San Diego Padres have their closer now because it is announced. They said Taylor Rogers will be the closer for the Padres, which is fun after everyone spent money on Robert Suarez and everything else over the last few days. So you got Rogers in San Diego now, and Chris Paddock went over to Minnesota. There were some other minor pieces like Brent Rooker went to San Diego, who he could become a little mess with playing time for some, but the main piece is Rogers, Paddock. Let's go one by one here. We'll start with Paddock first. He was this burst onto the scene a couple years ago. It was awesome. Then he's had some issues because he's a two-pitch pitcher working on the third pitch. It's been kind of an up and down thing for him. Maybe a change of scenery is going to help. Maybe pitching in a rough division or a bad division is going to help. What's your thoughts on Paddock going to Minnesota and maybe becoming more fantasy relevant again, or is just still concerned?
I mean, I think at this point, a change of scenery is best for Chris Paddock. It obviously, whatever they were doing in San Diego was not working. I think the best thing at this point in his career, we know Chris Paddock has the talent. I mean, he was a top, one of the top pitching prospects in all of baseball, and he showed us why in the majors in 2019. So we know he can do it. Things just kind of got off the rails, a little bit of injury and that sort of thing. Even a little bit last year, I think so. Yeah, the change of scenery is good for him. I think he's in a better spot with Minnesota in terms of they obviously see something in him if they gave up Taylor Rogers to get Chris Paddock. There were some signs from Chris Paddock last year before some oblique, some elbow injuries torpedoed his second half that he could kind of get back to what we saw his rookie year. That was trying to mix in a curveball. Paddock is so fastball changeup heavy. Mix in a little curveball and had a career high swing strike rate, 13% swing strike rate in the first half last year with a 3.84 expected ERA. Like that's pretty good peripherals before, of course, it all went down the hill and he got hurt and things unraveled in the second half. But so there are signs that that improvement could be there. And you couple that with a new regime, a new set of eyes in Minnesota. Like I think given where Chris Paddock was taken in draft season, I think it's worth a gamble. I mean, I'm not saying I'd throw down, a ton of money in Fab or whatnot, but he's worth a stab given the combination of prospect pedigree, what we saw in the first half from Paddock last year, and again a new organization, a new pitching coach to kind of remix those ingredients and see what comes out of that.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued just because we know what he was. We know a third pitch, like he's still young. You'd imagine he'll eventually figure out that third pitch, hopefully figure out that third pitch. And if he does, that could be pretty filthy. Like we've seen what it did for Tyler Glass now. Now I'm not comparing the two by any means, but just the addition of that third pitch can bring the stuff that made you so good before and just enhance it. And it's pretty simple stuff to discuss, but it really does make a huge difference. That's why there was so many critiques before. Like, you know, it works for now until they figure you out. But that third pitch can be tremendous, and I'm curious because getting to work on that third pitch against certain teams in that division isn't going to hurt. So that's a big plus for him. Yeah, we'll see. Like you said, I'm not running out to go make moves on him. There's probably other guys I'd rather go take flyers on. Like I know we talked about him a lot last week and I went and picked him up as anywhere I could. Like I'd still rather have Michael Wacha next week in two starts than go and get Chris Paddock. Like there's scenarios like that, but depending on the depth of your league, you know, AL only league, like he's going to get starts, and we know in like AL only leagues, that's the big deal. Like for, please forgive me, Tout or Labor, aren't you in AL only league?
AL Tout.
Yeah.
AL Tout, where yes, he will be heavily bidded on this coming Fab period. So yeah, you know, in your deep AL only leagues, yes, this is somebody who you absolutely need to look at. Like for example, I mean, so on Wednesday night, AL Tout ran the first Fab since we drafted in like mid-March. Mm-hmm. And the big fish was AJ Pollock, and you know, because of the trade from LA over to American League, and I put in my bid of like $352. This is a $1,000 Fab budget. I was like, that's pretty aggressive. I really like AJ Pollock. The replacement level in AL only is like nothing. And he went for $701 out of 1,000 with two backup bids over 600. So it's kind of like, yeah, exactly. I mean, in those deep leagues, anything, especially on the hitter side, a little more on the pitcher side, but anyone with a pulse and anyone who has skills is they will be aggressively bid upon. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Paddock this Sunday night in Tout.
It's a good point you make, because hitters is so much harder to find that consistent playing time, where pitchers, yeah, like injuries happen throughout the year. You're going to find guys that are relevant for like a month or two at a time. And that's kind of a more of an up and down, I wouldn't say fluid thing, but more doable. So that makes it interesting. Cause I remember we had a listener question on Tuesday and they were like, I'm in an AL only league. How much should we spend on Pollock? And I was like, I guarantee he goes for at least 550 to 600, if not more. And I had to explain to Toby, because he doesn't play only leagues, about like how important those at bats are. Like, people will break the bank for those at bats. It's a different animal. And then when I saw Patrick Davitt got him for seven something, I was just like, yeah, it's wild, but it makes sense. So I'm curious to see where Paddock goes. It'll be very, very intriguing. Now the fun part, and we'll get back to Minnesota in a minute, because this does affect Minnesota, but we'll go to San Diego here to Taylor Rogers, who we talked about on recent shows about how much we kind of were interested in him as a closer, like a mid-round option and a closer two or whatever. And I know I've been drafting him. We talked about him. Well, now he goes to San Diego. My first thought was, don't do this again. We just saw like Kimbrel get traded and that messed up the Trinan thing. We've seen Kenley Jansen go somewhere. I'm like, stop with all this. And at least they came out and said today, like a couple hours before we started recording, that Rogers is our closer in San Diego. Like, straight up our closer. Nothing to worry about there, at least for now. You know, it's coach speak. So that's a little refreshing. So what's your thoughts on Rogers going there? And if for some reason you were one that went in on Robert Suarez or someone else, how are you handling that situation?
I couldn't hear you, Bubba. I think that was Colin Weatherwax laughing as you were talking there. Colin chimed in with a listener question on our first show and asked what we felt about Taylor Rogers as a top 100 pick. And I was like, I don't know. And obviously couldn't see this coming, but yeah, like Taylor Rogers now is a bona fide, I would say, top 10 closer. I'm kicking myself because in the main event last night, my colleague, Brian Rudd at Baseball HQ, was drafting right in front of me, team 12. I was team 13, and he took Taylor Rogers one pick ahead of me in the seventh round. And so that was a great pick by him, and I'm kicking myself over not getting Rogers there because, yeah, with the regular job, I mean, that was the only thing that was holding me back from Rogers, was Minnesota's kind of history of mixing and matching and going a little bit committee. That's pretty much out the window. Like, I don't really need to talk about how good Taylor Rogers is. It was really about the role, and that's gone now. If you did draft Robert Suarez, like, that it just sucks. Like, it's bad luck. That's closer roulette. If you have a glaring need, I would say he's droppable. I think you need to be aggressive, especially early in the season on some of these early fab breakouts and things like that. You need to speculate and you need to be aggressive in your drops. And I think holding Robert Suarez, basically you're just kind of waiting for Taylor Rogers to fail. And I don't think that's going to happen. So it kind of sucks, especially if you drafted late in draft season, to give up on like a 10th round pick. But that's a sunk cost and you can't let that affect your decision-making going forward. I think you need to be aggressive and drop, even in 15 team mixed leagues, drop Suarez, unfortunately.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it's one of those, like, if you don't have a glaring weakness and you want to hold him for a week or two,
yeah,
okay, maybe. But there's probably going to be someone coming up on Sunday night that's worth putting a bid in for, and he makes an easier drop than maybe some other question marks you have. Let's put it that way. It stinks. Like you said, you're basically waiting for Rogers to get hurt or lose his job, and I think he has to be pretty bad to lose his job, because it seems like the Padres are pretty faithful. We saw Melanson keep the job all last year with some very competent arms back there. I believe the year before, I think it was, you know, a couple options going into the season, and they pretty much locked into one dude. Like, they're pretty much an organization that runs pure. Now they know the coaching staff shifted around, so we'll see. But it seems like they traded for a reason, and they were willing to come out and say what they said, I think speaks volumes, because they didn't have to. They could have said, we got a lefty, we got a righty, we're going to do like the Giants are doing. Like, it's McGee's 70% and then Rogers or Duvall. They could have easily done that and not said a word, but they didn't. And that's what makes it interesting to me. So, yeah, it's a benefit to those that drafted Rogers and not to those with Suarez. And that's just the breaks we get, as you said. Just it happens. It's happened all over the place. So do what you got to do there. Now the fun, because with Minnesota, like you said, it was never doubting Rodgers' talent. There was like three other options there, and they're all chomping at the bit waiting to get their shot. And we even saw it last year when Rodgers scuffled a bit. He lost his job, and then he kind of was in and out towards the end. And we wouldn't be shocked if that happened again. Plus, he was rumored to get traded about midseason. Well, it happened before the season now. So you have, like, looking at our buddy Greg Jewett. He already updated his chart, and I won't give everything away because you got to pay for it. But I'll tell you what he did with Minnesota here. Here's the options. Let's put it this way. I'll tell you how he listed them. But you have Alcala, who everyone loved like a month ago, 2 weeks ago, and then kind of got nervous about. You got Pagan. You got Columba, because Emilio Pagan came over in the deal. Mm-hmm. You got Tyler Duffy. It's a lot of people, Ryan. It's a lot of people. How are you approaching this?
A lot of bodies. If I was saying how I think this will go, I'd be lying because I have no idea. Yeah. Until we actually see what they do. And we haven't, I have not even heard, at least today, I haven't heard anything from Minnesota. They didn't play today. This is all total guesswork and could be irrelevant by the time this weekend hits. Yep. If I was just totally taking a stab at this, I would guess it's a committee. If I had to pick one that might stand out, it would be Tyler Duffy. I think he would be next in line. I know Alcala is the kind of the hipster name, the sexy name. He's got the skills, but Tyler Duffy's been pretty good in that bullpen for a long time. Last year was, you know, just okay, a 3.18 ERA for Duffy, but in 2020, Duffy had a 1.88 ERA, 2019, a 2.50 ERA. Like that's, and that 2.50 ERA was over 58 innings with the skills to boot, a 16% swing strike rate over the last three seasons combined, and the strikeout and walk rates to back that up too. So Duffy, I think if Duffy got the role, he could be a top 15 closer. I just don't know if that's going to happen. But yeah, if I'm speculating on one, it would be Tyler Duffy. If I'm speculating on someone else, and I took, and I was always glad to see Phil DeSoto do the same thing that I do in a main, I took a 30th round, final round stab at Emilio Pagan, as did Phil, just on the off chance that I thought he was going to get traded. And if he got traded as part of that deal, that maybe Minnesota sees enough in Pagan that they elevate him to the closer role. I have no idea if that's going to happen. If it doesn't, I'll cut him. But that's where I stand right now, is Duffy number one, Pagan two, but probably a committee. Duffy's good enough if he has the role to be a really good closer. He's had really good skills for the last 3 years.
Yeah, I like that point on Pagan too. But Duffy right now seems like the guy, as you said. I think there's nothing official that I've seen, but a lot of the buzz around, not just fantasy world, but just like beat reporters and stuff. It's like, okay, Duffy's going to finally get his chance to start the season. But like I said earlier, is we've seen Minnesota juggle that all the time. So it's a tough one to stand on, but I think for now, Duffy's the guy, but this is not a situation I break the bank in Fab for. Like, I don't feel overly confident in it. Like, if you're desperate after 4 days of baseball, I guess, but I'm not going crazy yet. I'd rather, like you did, go put a couple bucks on Pagan and see what happens. I was getting late round shares of Pagan, or at least talking about it with people when he was still in San Diego. When we didn't know what the role was there, because it wasn't Suarez, is 100% there. Pagan's closed before. He's had over 20 saves in a season before. Like, he's got the experience to do it. And we saw last year with the Twins, Alex Colomé had a lot of saves at the end of the season. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden Rocco Baldelli goes, you know what, Duffy, you've been awesome in the seventh and eighth innings for us. I'm putting Pagan in the ninth. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I'm not sure that's what he's going to do, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the other interesting thing, too, is there's no really lefty-righty comparison mm-hmm. now, because Rodgers was lefty, and so maybe we were thinking it was a, you know, just based on matchups, lefty-righty. Pagan's right-handed, Duffy's right-handed, Alcala's right-handed, so that maybe lends itself to a little bit more of a structured bullpen. Again, just guessing, but since they're all the same hand, that would actually lead to more of maybe like a pecking order as opposed to matchups. So we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. That's one to watch the weekend. Maybe we'll see a save chance or two. That will definitely help for sure. We'll discuss that a little later. But let's go to some other minor deal that took place today. Bradley Zimmer, so Justin Mason's probably crying somewhere. Maybe he's happy about it. I don't know. But he had a chance to start pretty much every day, or at least, you know, probably 70% of the time in Cleveland. Now he gets traded to the Blue Jays for Anthony Castro. It's a crowded Blue Jays outfield now. So, you know, in deep leagues, people were drafting Zimmer. They're taking chances on Zimmer. He was a late steals option in deep, deep leagues. Pretty much not worth much anymore to me. What are your thoughts?
No, I'm not interested. A, because he's the fifth outfielder now behind Tapia, I would think. And Zimmer just hasn't been that good. And I feel like we've been dreaming on what he can do for 5 years now. This is a age 29 season. So at some point you gotta let him free. Even if you've been a Bradley Zimmer proponent for many years, I'm not seeing it with Toronto. Like, yes, two guys could get hurt. That lineup's awesome, et cetera, et cetera. But too many things have to happen for someone that also doesn't really have the skills in the majors that we've seen anything from. So I'm moving on from Bradley Zimmer, which I guess doesn't really make sense because I never really had him in the first place.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I never drafted him either. I just know, like, Mason, that was one of his potential long shot net Cedric Mullins guys. So we'll see what happens there. It's a rough one for sure. Let's go to Chicago. Some news if you have Yoan Moncada. He's had at least 3 weeks, it looks like, with his It was oblique. Okay, I thought I zoned out. Yeah. So it's a muscle injury before the season starts. Never good. Never good. So what's your thoughts on this? Because these are things that can linger. They can pop up again. You're not dropping Yoan Moncada, obviously, but this is a big bummer right out the gates this season.
Yeah, it is, especially because it's a soft tissue thing. And I think that was one of the listener questions we had, or at least comments or maybe frustrations leading up to the show today and opening day. But yeah, you're not dropping Yoan Moncada for a three-week thing. I think you need to ride this out and just see what happens. But it's definitely a concern just because it is the oblique. That thing can linger. For the White Sox, for HQ, we just wrote this up, and it'll be out in the morning for subscribers. But the replacement looks to be Jake Berger. That is not good in your mixed leagues. I will probably, I mean, we were just talking about this in AL Tout Wars, in an AL only league, anyone with a pulse and a job is worth bidding on. So I may be ordering up a very cheap Jake Berger this weekend in Fab, but nothing substantial. And in mixed leagues, I think you just ignore this until Moncada comes back.
Yeah, Berger is fun because he's this big, lovable, fluffy teddy bear type guy that he's starting to get a fun social media personality. But there's a lot of holes in that swing. A lot of power in the swing. A lot of power, a lot of holes.
I did not know about the social media personality. I need to.
He started it. It's not like massive yet, but he's kind of slowly getting there. He was posting stuff throughout spring training, and I want to say he started a YouTube channel or something. I didn't go that far, but he's starting to slowly get going.
Some deep draft prep.
Yeah. Hey, the lockout was long. Like there was stuff going on. Yeah. You can only stare at the same ADP for so long. But he's interesting. Like, I like him in deep, deep leagues if you're desperate at a corner infield. But again, like I said, with the relievers, I hope you're not desperate yet. Because if you are, this can be a long season, I hate to say it. That's going to be a rough one. So, like, if you want to put a couple bucks in because you want to get a power guy, maybe he's got good matchup. I haven't even looked at their schedule the next couple weeks. I'm cool with it. But don't go breaking the bank for Jake Berger because he will be gone the second Moncada can play. And we've seen the peaks and valleys with Berger, and the valleys are pretty deep. So keep that in mind as well. Let's talk some opening day fun here, and we'll start with the first game. We'll kind of hit on all the games, like little quick thoughts or snippets through them. Cubs got the dub against the Brewers. Corbin Burnes looked human. He walked more guys today than he walked over like 100 innings or something last year, or like 100 something batters or something last year, which was crazy, but that happens. Nico Hoerner went deep. But the takeaway, as you put in the outline, which was very fun, it was like guessing games. Rowan Witt came in the seventh, I think it was. And when he got in trouble, Michael Givens warmed up. Then, oh, maybe it was the eighth. And then Michael Givens came in. Michael Givens came in. And then Mr. David Robertson, who was a popular Fab target last week, locked down the first save of the year. So are we thinking this is going to be the standard? Or what are your thoughts on the Chicago bullpen?
Yeah, I know a couple of weeks ago I was clamoring to turn up the wick, and wick was a
well, you and wick me was both.
Both of us. That's true.
Yeah, I had about a three draft run there where I grabbed wick in every draft, and it was
which is fine. You speculate on those closers, and if they don't work out, it doesn't burn you too bad. But it definitely I think Wick, at least tonight, because he did not look good either. So he came in the eighth in a tie game and did not get out of the inning. Givens warmed up and finished out. And actually, I would say Robertson didn't even get the highest leverage spot. It was Givens who got the highest leverage spot really with guys on base. Yep, in the eighth inning to get Wick out of the jam. So if anything, Givens was kind of the fireman in that game today. Again, it's just one game. We don't know if this is the actual pecking order, if it's a true committee or what the matchups were and that sort of thing. But it's definitely not a good sign for Rowan Wick. I will say that. I would definitely think this is down to Givens and Robertson. I wouldn't just assume it's only going to be Robertson because Givens did come through in the clutch with a strikeout when they needed it with two outs to bail out Wick. So, and that's just one thing too, like, and I will probably talk about this in a little bit, but like with takeaways on the, you know, these first weekend of games, or look at not just the box score, but like the situation that these guys are in, who they're facing, when they're coming in, are they coming in with guys on base? Because you might miss that kind of Givens tidbit that he just pitched the eighth and that was it, and Robertson was the ninth. Like that is what happened, but you miss a little bit of context by doing it that way. So just an interesting thing. But yeah, we'll see. Chicago, Robertson did look good. He was painting the corners. Fastball was sitting like 93 to 95. So that was decent. And if Robertson's available, absolutely take a stab at him because he pitched the ninth today. And as far as we know, it could be him going forward. But either him or Givens, probably a slight lean to Robertson at this point.
Yeah, I think it's a lean to Robertson, but I like your point on Givens there. Like he got the high leverage, and that's very, very important. Some things we don't always look at when we go to break things down. So I guess that's a really, really good point you made on that one.
Just real quick, we're talking about that game. Two crazy things in that game was first, I mean, you touched on it, Nico Hoerner hitting a home run off of Corbin Burnes. Like
you could have given me like 15 guesses. I never would have thought he'd have been the one to do it. Let's put it that way.
Has not hit a home run in the majors since 2019. Burnes, I think, gave up 7 home runs all of last season. So that was wild. And then the other wild thing was Kyle Hendricks striking out 7 to Burnes's 4. Did not see that coming as well. Hendricks looked okay. He gave up 3 walks as well, but I don't know. You can't predict ball. That's the beauty of this game, and overreacting to opening day was seeing Kyle Hendricks almost get twice as many Ks as Burnes, and then Burnes give up a home run to Nico Hoerner. Nothing to take away from it at all, I think, but just fun stuff.
Very, very fun stuff. That is 100% correct. Now, when we look at this, I want to switch over to Cleveland and Kansas City because there were a couple of things that stood out to me quite a bit, and I always screw up when I look at these charts for Savant. But one thing I did hear from people is, you know, Bieber went 4 2/3. I didn't expect him to go too long, but he really didn't throw with a lot of gas. I think his highest pitch, I'm looking at 91.8 miles an hour. He was kind of sitting around 90 most of the game with his fastball, which is not Bieber-esque. Let's put it that way. Were there any, I know it's one game, so we probably shouldn't go crazy over this, but do you have any concerns when you see something like that?
I do. I mean, yeah, the fastball, let's see, he threw 28 fastballs and average velocity 90.6 miles an hour, which is down 2.2 miles per hour from last season. So yeah, you never like to see a drop in fastball velocity that far. It was for folks who watched that game, it was brutally cold.
Yeah.
It was windy. It rained. It sleeted for a half inning. It was not ideal conditions. So, like, yes, you don't want to see a drop in velocity like that from Bieber, but also take that weather into account. Like, it was rough at Kauffman today. So, Bieber still had 7. The slider was working. 7 whiffs on the slider in 24 pitches. The curveball looked pretty good as well. No whiffs on that fastball. So, again, a little bit of a concern, but I wouldn't read too much into it yet. Let's see where Bieber sits at these next couple starts. Obviously, if you drafted Bieber, he's an auto start. You're not dumping him. I wouldn't really even look to trade him right now. But that's one thing to keep in mind is the weather, especially in these early April games. Both Chicago was really cold too. I did not feel too jealous to not be at one of those two games today and be on the golf course instead.
Yeah, definitely. A couple other takeaways. Tristan McKenzie piggybacked that start. That was reported on the broadcast. I didn't know about it before the game, but they talked about that afterwards. He threw three innings, gave up a couple runs. If you have McKenzie, he will find the rotation. Yep. I won't get too, wouldn't get too worried about that. That's just early season stuff, in my opinion. Am I wrong, or are you on the same page there?
Nope, same deal. And the Cleveland crew mentioned that same. The announcers mentioned that same thing. So.
But I want to go over to the Kansas City side. We talked about Chicago's bullpen, and we know Kansas City. We kind of had the idea it was Scott Barlow's role, but you know, there's Staumont, there's Brents, there's other options in that bullpen, and you never know what they're going to do. And with our first game here, Greinke first off went 5 2/3. I think we talked about Greinke in the past, or I don't know, somewhere, and he did what he does, 1K, but he ate up innings, limited damage. Like, he's got a bunch of hard hits, but limited the damage. But the takeaway for me is Brents came for an inning, Staumont a third of an inning. Barlow got the two inning save, I believe, in this one.
Two inning win.
Two inning win for Scott Barlow out of the bullpen. So, a couple things. Looks like it's Barlow's for now. Same time, two innings might mean this is a leverage thing. We might see more mixing and matching, basically. So, I know it's just one game, but any thoughts on this usage?
No, I mean, I wouldn't read too much into it. Highest leverage was Barlow, and I still think he's the guy. I think this is just an example of Kansas City. They are willing to kind of get out a little bit from that traditional closer role. So, I wouldn't read too much into it. I think the plan was for him to go two innings anyway. Barlow's first inning, I think he only threw like 10 or 12 pitches. So it was a very light inning. And then they threw him back out there with the lead in the ninth. So they did not go to anybody else to get the save chance in the ninth inning, which is probably a good sign for Barlow. Still think he's the guy, and you got a free win out of him today. So that's pretty good. Plus two innings of good ratios and a couple Ks.
Yeah, most definitely. We'll head over to Pittsburgh and St. Louis. Part of your outline here is the Pirates suck. And yeah, 9-0. Like I knew it would be bad, but this was rough. And so rough that Wainwright looked downright filthy. When you look at just his overall, his line here, he got 6 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 6 Ks, no walks. Looked very efficient there. And when you look at a little deeper when it comes to Wainwright, just his overall production, because I had like Curlin and some other guys messaging me in a DM. He was pumping with some gas early on. He finished with an average of almost 90 on the sinker, which for him still pretty good. Like, if he can sit around 90 with his other pitches, that could be fun. I know he threw a 67-mile-an-hour curveball at one point in time, so that was fun as well. But I was worried about Wano coming in this year, coming off that monster season, and obviously it's the Pirates. I'm not going to overreact here, but what's your thoughts on this performance from him? Or do you credit him with being pretty good, or is it the Pirates are that bad?
I guess a little bit of both, but I would say the Pirates, especially with Ke'Bryan Hayes leaving the game after his first at bat, a bad lineup got even worse. Like, there was nobody except for Brian Reynolds.
Vogelbach is leading off. Vogelbach
hitting leadoff. The other Diego Castillo stepped in and was hitting thirds. Yoshi Tsutsugo is your.
He went 2 for 3. Guy.
He did go 2 for 3. Was pinch hit for by Josh Van Meter before Kevin Newman. Like, it's I feel bad for Pirates fans. We knew it was going to be this way, but it was just we were sitting there on the couch and looking at the Pirates lineup, and it was just like, man, it just drove the point home. Like, you need to be streaming anybody available in your leagues this year against the Pirates, because if this was their opening day lineup, and fortunately for Ke'Bryan Hayes, it sounds like this was minor, and good for him for inking that contract before the game this morning.
Yep.
He'll be back, it sounds like, on Saturday, which is awesome news for him, but barely moves the needle, and I would expect Brian Reynolds to probably get dealt anyway. There are rumors of that before the season, but yeah, just drove the point home that That's a terrible lineup, a terrible bullpen. JT Brubaker was the opening day starter, did not look good. Surprise. Just not good stuff in Pittsburgh this year.
A little more on the Cardinals real quick here. Carlson led off, very productive, scored a couple runs. But, yeah, Tyler O'Neill, a couple of hits, 5 RBIs and a home run. Arenado went deep. Tommy Edmond even went deep. Harrison Bader had a couple of hits. So your fantasy-relevant players pretty much gave you a little bit of something in this game, which was fun. Any thoughts on these guys?
Goldschmidt stole a base, yeah. which is huge. Walked four times.
Tremendous. But, yeah. So, any thoughts on the cards?
Not really. Again, you don't want to overreact, but it was really good to see Goldschmidt steal a base. Like, I, if you have any light at all at any point during the season, especially from someone who's older and at a position where you don't get many steals, like, that's important to me. So that was good to see Goldie do his thing there. It was kind of cool to see Tommy Edmund go deep after all of the.
I'm one of the haters, so yeah. It was,
been a lot of. I'll say pre-opening day victory lapping about his lineup spot, which whatever. He had a home run out of the ninth hole, and that was fun. It was barely a wall.
They had to ump review it. They had to review it.
It hit the top of the wall. The ump reviewed it, and it was the first time that we had heard the ump, kind of like football style. Like, the play is under review. He didn't actually say that, but he did say something to the effect of, the call on the field stands or something like that. So that was kind of cool to hear that for the first time. But yeah, some poetic justice. I saw Toby tweeted out a fun little thing on Tommy Edmund. Got some razzing on Twitter today. So who knows? But yeah, Edmund did hit ninth, but did hit a bomb out of there as short as it actually traveled.
Yeah, we'll see how that continues on for sure. But it was a fun drubbing, as it might be all weekend if you're a Pirates fan. Rob DiPietro's in the chat, and he says, that awesome trendy retro light looks like it's Bloomfield's mic when it's right over your shoulder
This thing behind me. Thanks, Rob. I don't know if trendy's the right word. It was just in my basement, but
Rob's on the Team Edmund train, because him, Toby, Weimer, and the robot are all in a group chat together. So they're all on Team Edmund. So keep an eye on that one. But let's head to the nation's capital, where Tyler Miguel got the start because Max Scherzer did get pushed back a day, and Miguel did not disappoint. 5 innings, 3 hits, no walks, 6 Ks. Pure filth is the nicest way I'll put it. It was just nasty. And his fastball maxed out at 99, average 96. Changeup averaged almost 90. His CSW on the day was 34%, which is pretty, pretty good, if you ask me. So, This Nats team, like, we know they're not great, but ain't no joke either. And he was filthy, absolutely filthy, Ryan.
He was. It was awesome to see Siler Megill do his thing. Took him in the 14th round, which was the earliest I took Cy in the main last night. And so I was watching his start with interest today. And yeah, the fastball velocity, like, he came out, the adrenaline was pumping because he was like almost sitting 98 in the first inning, and the second inning was down more to like 95, 96. But you're right, average 96.1, which is a buck and a half higher than last year. The changeup had a lot of downward movement to it, got him out of a double play right after I believe it was a Francisco Lindor error. And the next, so that showed something good too. Miguel rebounded from that, induced a double play with the changeup. If you watch one at bat on opening day, watch Miguel versus Juan Soto. I believe it was in the second or third inning. Miguel just blew 98 with runners on the corners and one out. It was a big spot in the game. Blew 98 right past Soto, and the whole at bat was really fascinating. But if you go back and watch one at bat today, I would watch Miguel versus Soto in the probably was the third inning, actually. Check that out. It was really cool. A few innings later, Trevor May pitched through the same pitch to Soto, who hit it in the upper deck. I think May's was at like 96 to Miguel's 98. So those 2 miles an hour difference matters,
especially to a guy like Soto.
Exactly, especially a guy like Soto. So,
well, it's funny. I'll let you go here in a minute, but it's funny that May is the one that gave it up, because it was one of their last spring training games against the Nationals. May was talking in the dugout, and I remember they showed the clip, and Soto hit an oppo bomb, and the announcer for the Mets goes, "So do you want to tell us what you think, a little play-by-play of that?" He's like, "Hey, he's good. What do you want me to tell you?"
Not all you can say.
Yeah, he's like, "He's good. What do you want me to do?"
That speaking of lineups, we were just talking about the Pirates. The Nationals lineup is brutal. Outside of Soto and Cruz, that's a pretty rough crew. We've got Victor Robles bunting already in his first at bat, trying to get Alcides Escobar from first to second. Like, it's not good. it's not good outside of those two for the Nationals. But yeah, McGill, going back to McGill, you know, you don't want to claim victory at all after one start, but he looked really impressive. Let's see how far he can take this, but also how far he can keep that velocity bump. Like, you don't want to go too crazy over one outing, but he did look really good today.
And at least we don't have to talk about the A's lineup, because I'm afraid to see what that looks like tomorrow.
Next week's pod.
Whew, man, that'll be, we could spend an hour talking about how bad it is. Real quick, just because I have to, because people ask my Patrick Corbin thoughts all the time. But I was excited to see him. You know, he's hit 92 with the fastball, averaging almost 91, which is good to see him again. He had a 28% CSW on the fastball, which made me feel a little better about life on an overall 28% CSW out there. So, still, can you want more? Yes, 100%. But he was much more – he was better. Let's put that out. I don't know what the exact word to use with Corbin this go-around, but very serviceable, that's for sure. So if he can continue that, you can make do this season. We'll see how it continues on. But that was at least a little bit of a bright moment when it came to Patrick Corbin.
Yeah, and I think it was scoreless through the first few innings, and then it all kind of unraveled at once. But the big thing I've been watching with Corbin is fastball velocity. He was the biggest gainer in fastball velocity last season from the second half to first half, and that went down a little bit this tonight to 92.3, down a buck and a half from last year. So I'm a little worried.
But we'll see.
Yeah, I'm a little worried. And only two whiffs on 24 sliders. Like, you don't want to see that. Keep the faith. I'm not saying to give up on your boy, but let's maybe bench him for next week. I don't know who they play, but
I don't even think I had him in every lineup today. Let's put it that way. I didn't need to, thank God. But yeah, it'll be interesting as things go along. Reds at the Braves. Tyler Molle, 5 innings, no earned, 7 Ks. Dodged some bullets, but got the job done. Max Fried, on the other hand, great first inning. Not great the rest of the way. 5 2/3, 5 earned, 5 strikeouts, and his way to his loss on the season. Any thoughts on these two starting pitchers? One very good, one not so much.
I've been really interested to see what Tyler Molle would look like. And yeah, this was a very big step forward. Molle in the second half, I believe it was the second half of last year, where things kind of went haywire for him. Yeah, in the second half, Molle had a 3.87 ERA, but the strikeout rate went way down. In the first half last season, it was 30%, down to 25% in the second half, with a drop in velocity, with a drop in swinging strike rate, and especially on the slider, got a lot fewer whiffs in the second half last season. So I know that Tyler Molle has better skills than what we saw at the end of last season. It was nice for him to do this against a really good lineup. So that context can work both ways, to do what Molle did against Atlanta in Atlanta, even without Acuna. I mean, that's a loaded lineup, is really good for the first start and for going forward. So good on Molle.
Yeah. Austin Riley, 3-for-4 with the bomb. He had a big day, but the only guy that did anything for Atlanta. So that was good to see. Flip side, Brandon Drury. We thought Nico Horner was a fun one. Brandon Drury, who I couldn't even have told you played on the Reds, hit a home run, the 3-run homer that kind of did the separating in this game. So that was a fun one as well.
Might be lying if I said I knew Brandon Drury was starting tonight for the Reds. That was one that popped up on my phone, MLB home run, and I was like, whoa.
100%. 100%. I'm with you on that one. There's two games still going on. I just want to mention San Diego, Arizona. Darvish had a no-no through 6. He lost it, but he had a no-no through 6, which is pretty impressive on opening day. So that's fun. Really not much we can take away. Otani looked okay in his limited. Framber's still on in the 7th right now, as he's Mr. Efficient in this game. Any quick thoughts on these two games as we're kind of still hanging in air with these ones?
Just ground balls galore from Framber Valdez. I don't think people realize how elite that skill is. No one in the last, I believe it's the last 20 years that I've gone back and looked, had the amount of innings and over 60% ground ball rate that Framber Valdez had last season. So it got him tonight. He got out of a double play early in the game. That got him out of a jam. So that was good to watch. And then the other game, what was, San Diego. So I was interested in seeing Madison Bumgarner because he was one of I put a Bloom board out last or early this week, I believe, just kind of wrapping up spring training. And I did a velocity increase for at least the parks that not every spring training park has Statcast. So it's not a full list, but I put out fastball velocity gainers in 2022 spring training versus last season. And Madison Bumgarner was back up sitting like 92. He's one of the top gainers from last season. So I was interested to see how he would look against San Diego. And I think he walked the bases loaded in the third or fourth inning, had four walks on the night, only went three innings. So it must have been the beginning of the fourth. And disappointing. I was looking at in the main last night, taking a stab at Bumgarner, and like after the 25th round, I ended up not getting him. But just interesting to see. Let's see where I don't have the velocity in front of me for how he looked tonight, but the lack of control for Bumgarner is a little bit uncharacteristic. But I was interested to see how he looked, and I guess he did not.
Let me tell you, I got it right here. So Mad Bum maxed out at 89.7 on the cutter, 93.1 on the four seam. He averaged 91.6 on the four seam. He had zero whiffs on six four seam he had 22 four seam fastballs, six swings, zero whiffs on the fastball. He only had four total whiffs on 28 swings today.
Not great.
No, at 19% CSW overall. You want much more than that, of course. So we'll see. He had 16 foul balls, so guys were fouling him off. He just wasn't putting them away. Yeah, the walks are going to do him in because he needs to be efficient without being dominant these days. Yep. So that's going to be interesting to see how that one plays. And Anthony Rendon, just foul. This is why I love doing podcasts with games on. It just totally like stops everything. But
it's wonderful audio, I'm sure.
But, oh, yeah, people love
it. It's cool for
us. People love it. But let's talk about some things we're looking forward to this weekend, because we kind of, if people listen to how we broke down these games, you got to see what we're looking forward to, paying attention to things. And I don't go into every game, but games I'm curious about, I will look at and do the quick perusing on these. But you got velo changes down here. Anybody particular or just in general are you looking for velocity changes?
Yeah, that's just in general velocity changes. And it's a great point, Bubba. Like, we've kind of hit on these a little bit as we've gone through just the smaller list of games at opening day. Velocity changes, but like I said with the Bieber example, kind of try and take a little bit of context, especially early April games with the weather.
Luis Castillo would like to talk to you if you don't understand this.
Yes, Luis Castillo would like to have a word, and he fortunately gets to skip April as he's delayed with a shoulder injury, which maybe not as fortunate for him.
Yeah,
but we'll see. One thing we haven't talked about, just because I have not been able to look at this information yet, but I will be very soon, and probably putting stuff out on Twitter on things that I find are pitch mix changes. I mentioned this with the Suarez example earlier, being aggressive with drops. I think that's even much more important on the pitcher side. This is the time to be able to try and look at not only who has the best, you know, strikeout minus walk rate and that sort of thing, but go one level deeper and see, is there an actual like change in approach that's driving that? And pitch mix is a great way to do that, pitch mix and velocity. But if you see guys upping usage on some of their better pitches, throwing a new pitch, fading a bad pitch, that sort of thing, throwing, you know, ditching a four seamer for a cutter with a little bit more movement, those types of things, and they're getting skills, even if it's for like a start or two, you need to be aggressive early in the season in Fab and go after those guys. I mean, Lucas Giolito is the ultimate example of that. When he broke out with the White Sox, he had the velocity increase and a change in pitch mix. People who identified that early in April and pounced in Fab had the whole season to reap those rewards. So pitch mix changes is definitely something that I'll be diving into and looking at this weekend. And then bullpen usage. Again, use the example of the Cubs and the Reds to, I guess, have an example of how we look at that for certain games. So I won't go too much into there, but yeah, look at when these guys are being used, what kind of leverage, if there's any matchup things to take into consideration with bullpen. So those are the three big things that I'm looking at on the pitcher side this weekend.
Yeah. The bullpen one will be big because there's a lot of question marks, and you know, we made a lot of moves on this first Fab week, but there might be a few that pop up here this weekend just based on usage. And and like you said, the Givens thing is a perfect example. Like, it's not just starting pitchers. We have to look at the conditions and the situation. relievers is big too. And that's how guys like Phil Dussault and Greg Jewett and Doug Dennis and all these guys go out and they see the leverage, and that might not be the closer next week or the week after, but they'll be there in 3 weeks, stuff like that. And so it's just something to keep an eye on if you want to start specking for a buck or two instead of spaying in like 160 bucks. These are the ways to do it. Like, it's the old saying, I know Vlad and other guys talk about it, is you should be churning and burning something on your roster. Well, if you have a Robert Suarez, go see who got some high leverage spots this past week, and go, I'd be willing to go that route type situation.
Yep.
But little things like that with the closers is definitely a good thing to see. I mean, I like the pitch mix and velo, because the spring training is so annoying. We haven't got to see a lot of it because it's just not available, which is tough. And Zimmerman's been busy, so he wasn't doing the velocity change charts. And I'm not smart enough to figure all that out. So it will be done with something to definitely keep an eye on. Because like we saw Giolito, he got bigger and was throwing better this spring. That moved his ADP up. But is it a real thing? Was it a spring thing? Well, we'll find out this week, and at least in one start for a little bit. So definitely some kind of things along those lines. Before we get to the hitters things, I feel like I did a disservice to an individual if we don't talk about it real quick. We skipped right over it, but I saw the bottom line come through, and I'm like, oh, Kyle Hendricks was filthy today. Filthy with the changeup. I'm not sure if you saw it or not, so I feel really bad that because he's a guy that everybody wanted last year, came through this year. He had 13 whiffs on 22 swings on his changeup with a 45% CSW. It was filthy.
Follow if I'm sure most listeners are following Alex Chamberlain on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Alex has been a big Hendricks proponent for years now. He had a good little, I don't know, soliloquy, mini thread, whatever, on Kyle Hendricks. So check that out. I will not even attempt to pronounce his Twitter handle. So just search Alex Chamberlain Fangraphs and you'll find him. 13 whiffs on 33 changeups is pretty sweet. We'll see.
It's worth pointing out. That's why I wanted to bring it up, though, because I'm still slightly hesitant from what we saw last year. Again, weather, first game of the year, early game, lots of things could be in play. But man, if he could find that role that he had all before last year, that could be fun. And
the,
in your
had the three walks, but I don't know,
your,
one game
in your 10 and 12 team leagues, probably more 10, he might still be available. So it make, and as I try to remind people, most people play in 10 and 12 team leagues. So keep an eye when you start searching that kind of stuff. Things you're looking for this weekend when it comes to hitters, Ryan.
Hitter side, I'm much more, and this is maybe just my style, I don't know. I'm much more patient with hitters. If you've got, I mean, obviously, if Mike Trout goes over 20 this weekend, you're keeping him in your lineup. I feel like pitchers can reinvent themselves a lot quicker, and it's just a lot easier to quantify things like velocity, pitch mix, movement, that sort of thing, than it is to see if a hitter has remade himself. I think you need to be a lot more patient on the hitter side. So I'm not really looking at hitter skills for quite a while, actually. Even if I have like a, trying to think of just like a random 15th round pick, whatever, if I drafted someone in the, you know, middle rounds and he struggles for the first week or two, I'm still probably not doing anything about it. The only thing I'm really looking at for hitters is playing time and lineup position, things like that. I do, especially some of the fringe guys. If they're not playing, then that's an issue. You want guys on your team that play. This sounds really simple. Like, you know, they don't pay us the big bucks to say that, but, playing time is important. If you've got fringe guys who are not playing, you need to look at dropping them and be aggressive and finding guys that do play. But in terms of a skill, if someone's got a high strikeout rate, a low hard hit rate, a low barrel rate through the first month of the season, a lot of that is just variance. And I'm really not too worried about it. If there's one thing you want to look at, if you're just eager and itching to find something, you can use max exit velocity is what a lot of people like to use in really small samples. And that's basically just what's your hardest hit ball and how fast did it go? And you can compare that to last season. And that there have been a lot of studies done on max exit velo that kind of at least make it somewhat predictable in small samples compared to everything else that we have available in the tool set. So if you're itching to do something, max exit velocity, but again, I would be patient with your hitters as long as they're playing.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. And there's been tons of great work done on for hitters, how long it takes to actually stabilize, to get like a feel of how these guys are actually doing good or bad, because everybody slumps throughout the season. It's just, what do you do when you're not slumping? And yep. It's the old jokes, like if they play almost every day, it, like the difference between hitting like 280 and 300 or something is like 3 hits a month or something. Yep. It's like so minuscule in the grand scheme of things that you panic over it, but you really shouldn't. It's like so silly. Like you mentioned, McGill gave up one hit that was a blooper to left field. Like that counted for the guy's batting average. Just remember that. So it's don't panic and kind of sit and wait. I'm with you there. The pitchers, when you can see some like velo issues or whatever, that's, you can maybe put a little more red flag up on that and get ahead of the game there. Where a hitter, it's just, you know, he might still be getting loose. Smaller spring training. This is, he's not facing the double A pitcher in the second inning today. He's facing Shohei Ohtani for 3 at-bats. Like, make difference. So, and plus this weekend, you're getting most of the top of the rotation than you will next week. So keep that in mind. Good also. Point. Playing time though, if I sat down and like started looking at team by team, I could name a bunch of guys. But one guy I wanted to just bring up, because I am seriously looking at playing time, and we talked, there's a listener question on lineups, so I won't mention some other guys till then, but Josh Lowe is one I seriously want to look at, because I think some of us are either fortunate or not, depends on how you look at it, that he got dropped this past week in a lot of leagues, because you should have dropped him. He was in the minor leagues until Austin Meadows got traded, and now you have Josh Lowe up here, who on paper should have an everyday playing time, but he might not, because it's the Rays. So I want to see that before I put Fab bids in this weekend, because has 2020 upside, but I want to see him play. So that's interesting.
And that is, we will see, I mean, by Fab Sunday, we will have 3 data points. So we'll have 3 lineups to see how Tampa has used him. I would hope if you're bringing someone of Lowe's caliber up that you're going to play every day, but we did not see that with CJ Abrams, for example, with the Padres tonight. So we'll see. But yeah, monitor those lineups. That's a perfect example, Bubba, of who's playing. And even with someone like Lowe, I don't really care where he hits. If he hits ninth, whatever. As long as he's playing, I'm happy, and I'm aggressive this weekend in Fab. So
he's a legit 2020 bat. So if he's at least playing every day, I'm in. But we gotta see how that one plays out. Some listener questions here before we head on out and enjoy the end of this pitcher's duel in Anaheim. Simon P. asks, my NL-only auction is this weekend. Bellinger and Yelich will be available for bidding, so what do you guys think? My gut says avoid, but I'm no expert. There's about 30% inflation, and for some context, Castellanos is being kept at $38, Harper at $37. How much would you pay for Bellinger and Yelich? It's NL-only. If he said AL-only, if he said mixed league, I'd quickly say no, because it's just my philosophy on these guys. But NL-only... guys are in play.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, Bellinger and Yelich are absolutely not avoids in NL only. It's easy to sit here and just kind of bag on these two guys. And Yelich, I mean, we didn't talk about this, but he looked terrible today.
Yeah,
Robertson made him look foolish with a curveball late in the game. Again, just one at bat, but like, man, just did not have the aggressiveness, and just it didn't look good for Yelich today. That said, yeah, and in NL only, those guys are probably worth at least $20. I don't know with inflation and that sort of thing, whatever. But those are guys you don't want to avoid. I would say if you had to pick one right now, I would lean Bellinger. And I've been that way throughout draft season, just because Bellinger is younger, does not have the kind of back stuff that can recur with Yelich. And I don't know, like I said, one at bat today or one game today, but watching Yelich today did nothing to change that opinion. One other thing I'll add, and I saw this on Twitter, is 3 of the smartest guys in fantasy baseball are on Bellinger, and that's Phil Dussault, that's Vlad, and that's Casey Cha. And you know, it's not a blind appeal to authority, but if those 3 guys are all in on someone like Bellinger and you're deciding between a Bellinger and a Yelich, go Belly and blame those 3 guys if it doesn't work out.
Oh, trust me, I have a bunch of I am a very sarcastic person. My friends understand that, so I'm gonna have fun with Vlad if things go wrong, because Vlad gets it. But Vlad usually doesn't get things wrong very often, so we'll see how this goes.
You gotta pick your spots and go with him.
Exactly. Yep. But one question, I want to kind of play devil's advocate here for a second, because I don't play a lot of only leagues. You obviously at least play some. with the idea with Yelich, barring just complete catastrophe, he's going to play pretty much every day and probably in the middle of that order, which is a good order. Where Bellinger, there's still avenues of potential platoons like we saw at times last year. Would that change your approach in the draft, or is that just like, hey, it happens. Like, okay, things went wrong, it happens, and you still go Bellinger, or do you kind of put that into play at all for an NL-only situation?
It's a good point because in these only leagues, at-bats are king. You have to have guys that play. I'd still lean Bellinger even with that risk. You're right. Like, as long as Yelich is not on the IL, he's going to play in Milwaukee. Yeah. But the more Yelich plays, he's kind of just doing more and team. More damage to your team. So like in this case, I'd still go Belly.
Ooh, Alex Bregman going deep. There we go. Yancey Eaton, you guys might have heard of him before. Good buddy. Biggest lineup order surprise. Okay, here we go. Nola was leading off versus a lefty. Swanson batting ninth. We kind of knew Swanson was there if you follow Mike Curlin. Aristis Aquino batting second. It's because a lefty was on. I guarantee you Tyler Naquin will be in there tomorrow. Just going to throw that one out there. But that's a platoon thing, which you're going to see this weekend. And then CJ Abrams, this is one I want to talk about. He made the team but didn't start. I think it's because a lefty was on the mound. That's my two cents. Abrams is more of a platoon piece for now, contrary to what a lot want to believe.
Yeah, I think it probably is platoon for now. And I'm just trying to see. No, he has not come in yet since Bumgarner's been out of the game. But that's probably what it is with Abrams. I'd still, similar to what we were just talking about with Lowe, I would like to see Abrams get everyday playing time if you're going to have someone of his caliber of a prospect. I know he hasn't had a lot of time in the high minors, which is concerning to me. But if you're going to call that guy up, I mean, use him. I mean, they started Kim tonight, who did have a steal. But I'd like to see Abrams. I mean, you're just stunning his growth if you don't play him against lefties. It's just that reinforcing, okay, he can't hit lefties, but then you also don't give him a chance to actually do it. And
one of my biggest pet peeves, man. So. Yeah, I heard it for years as a Giants fan with Brandon Belt. They said it all the time. You can't hit him. They never let him. They finally let him hit him. He's a little better than league average. Like, he's not killing your team. Like, they'll never hit him if you don't let him hit him, like you said. So I hate that with the passion when people do that.
Quick lineup thing that just to answer the question, and this may be sarcastic, but it would be cleanup hitter Matt Duffy. Is the most surprising thing as Yordan Alvarez goes
bomb
deep off Ryan Tempera to deep lefty, center lefty. Field. Yeah, cleanup hitter Matt Duffy.
I missed having that.
Yeah. Seeing Ohtani, Trout, Rendon, Matt Duffy was interesting.
Yeah, Matt Duffy hitting cleanup. I literally had the double take when I saw. I tweeted it out like, what? Because out of all the options on that roster, that was your cleanup hitter. But that's Joe Maddon at his finest right there, folks. That's what Joe Maddon does. So that was surprising. The other one I wanted to bring up, I'm glad I was going to go right past this, but I wanted to talk about it. Johnny VR was not in the lineup today at all with a righty on the mound. Was I not happy? No, I wasn't. But part of when the move happened, I'm like, my goal is 130 to 140 games. I think we talked about it on this show when it first happened. That's what he usually plays. That means you're going to give the kids a chance. And then when things get rocky, VR starts to get his. Secondly, home opener, you're going to let the kids go play in the home opener. That's kind of my thought. I could be wrong. I could be staying optimistic here, but I'm not in full panic mode if I have Johnny VR yet. Because if you drafted Johnny VR to be a starter on your team, that's a problem already too. So I'm not panicking on VR. What were your thoughts when he was not in the lineup?
I agree. I didn't want to see him not out there, but not panicking either. Mostly because like you mentioned, Bubba, hopefully didn't draft him assuming he'd be a full-time player. I do think eventually he probably will be, because this leads to my next point, is that VR just has so many different paths to playing time. I think we mentioned this last show where, HQ, we've got him projected second, third, short outfield. And so if any one of those open up, VR is there and probably is a full-time player. So yes, on opening day, maybe a little disappointing that he didn't get in there, but if I drafted VR, I'm not cutting him this week over this. And I would at least give it another week, see how often he plays. And then maybe even beyond that, and just let, for example, Patrick Wisdom tumble. I know even though Nico Hoerner went deep, like let's see how these guys fare over a longer sample before we give up on VR, who basically backs up everybody in that lineup. So
yep, 100% agree. So don't panic yet. The doc, Mike Carter, he was the one that asked, what do the White Sox do for 3 weeks without Yoan Moncada? We talked about that earlier. It's Jake Berger time for now. So maybe get a side of fries and enjoy. MS at SMMS asks, is it even worth speculating on a Minnesota closer role given their past propensity to shuffle guys in and out of the role? We kind of hit on that too. If you want to rehash it real quickly for him, I'm not going to speculate much unless you can get really cheap with Emilio Pagan. That's where I would speculate.
So that's the thing. Like, yeah, it kind of depends on the question being like, what are you giving up by speculating? So if it costs you nothing to pick up a Duffy or a Pagan, and those would be my two in that order, then absolutely do it. And let's see how it shakes out. If it's a tough drop or you have to spend a good chunk of your fab money, again, given the information we know as of opening night, I would not open up the wallet for one of those two guys. So it all depends on what you're giving up to hold either one.
Yeah, 100% with you on this one. But Ryan, it's going to wrap us up, friend. Opening day is in the books. Any final thoughts as we head into the weekend? So we kind of hit on most of it, but any final thoughts for the listeners? We've got Masters weekend, big weekend. We got more baseball. There's 13 games on Friday. There's 5 games early if you're DFS brain. 5 games early, 3 middle games, and then 5 late games. It's spread out through the entire day. It's glorious.
I was going to say tomorrow. I mean, today it was kind of, I was saying this to my buddy. I mean, it was kind of lackluster, especially the afternoon slate. There were only 2 games. There were a couple cancellations, I know, but there were only those 2 afternoon games, and 3 of the 4 teams were Kansas City, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh. So it was just kind of like, but yeah, Friday's the day, man. So many games all day long. I would say just advice for this weekend, sit back and enjoy it. Like, we have waited so long for this, and there were weeks this offseason where I didn't even know that this would even happen. Definitely at least in April. But even further than that with the CBA. So enjoy it. If you want to fire off some Twitter takes and relish in your first round pick going deep, I don't care. Have fun with it. That's why we do this. And then regroup on Sunday and get prepped for your fab. So that's what I would do. Enjoy the fact that we have games these next couple of days, and then get back to the grind on Sunday by prepping your moves.
100% agree. Have a lot of fun with it. Don't forget, fab is just around the corner. We have that weekly grind called fab, so that'll be fun as well. And for those that do have Robert Suarez, because Taylor Rogers isn't there yet, Suarez is starting the bottom of the ninth in a save situation. So you might get at least one save out of this, because Taylor Rogers, I doubt he's even in Arizona yet, or at least playing. So at least you might get something out of this. Let's keep an eye on that. Now, if tomorrow Rogers is there and Suarez closes, everything we said goes out the window. So enjoy. But this is the fun of fantasy hilarious. Baseball.
Rogers is en route. Can't get to the field in time to show up for his ninth inning.
I hope he doesn't have like a 30 save bonus clause and he finishes with 29 this year. That'd be a rough one. Something his like
flight
that.
Was delayed.
Mm-hmm. Minnesota, bad weather, couldn't get out. Yeah. But all right, we'll wrap it up there, everybody. Again, you can check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I'm at BD Entric. This was Bubba in the Bloom, episode 3. Catch you guys next week.
Better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards, that's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.